Welcome to Continued Success. I'm Justin Clue. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. This is episode 111. Liz, I had a bowling coach in high school. Yes, I was the captain of the bowling team and enjoyed all of the fruits of the social labor that provided. But I had a bowling coach tell me that a score of 111 in bowling is actually, in bowling lore, you draw a little roof on it and call it a shithouse. And I think that's absolutely appropriate for this episode of Continued Success, a podcast where we talk about the Philadelphia Phillies. How you feeling?
Oh, I had some disturbing dreams after that loss last night.
Pretty wild.
Lots of screaming at things that were not answering me and not hearing me.
The Phillies have gone 1-5 now against the Miami Marlins and the Baltimore Orioles, both teams projected to finish in last place. The Orioles famously being projected by, I believe, ESPN to possibly not even win 10 games. I believe their win against the Phillies last night, in which they completed a 3-game sweep of the Phillies in Philadelphia, saw the Orioles get that 10th win. Yeah, they are now 10-7 on the season. Orioles fans rejoiced on this.
As they should.
As they should. And frankly, you know, I think we have a lot to say here. There's a lot that sucks about all of this. One thing I'd like to point out is that the Orioles, as I said, rebuilding team. Marlins, a rebuilding team. The Phillies were a rebuilding team, but are they rebuilt? Did they consider themselves rebuilt? Where'd we land on this? I feel like we tried to talk this out at the beginning of the season. Where are the Phillies?
They signed Bryce Harper. They signed Zach Wheeler. They signed a handful of other quality free agents. They've rebuilt. This is the team we have. Like, they can do things to make it better, but there are parts of it that are, you know, that they've placed big bets on. That's the way it is now.
That's bad.
That is a rebuilt team.
That is bad news.
It is bad news for all of us, yes.
That is bad news because the Orioles and Marlins are definitely rebuilding and definitely only a year or two into rebuilding. But apparently, they have already rebuilt ahead of the Phillies, who I was trying to determine are either rebuilding for 6 years or have failed at a rebuild. And I think that's grimly enough kind of what we're looking at here. I don't know. I mean, Liz, what's the move? I mean, there's a lot that gets tangled up here because you could, if you were the Phillies front office, we wouldn't like this, but you could throw this all away and just say, well, COVID, it jacked everything up. It changed everything. You know, there's decisions we would have made in a full length season that we didn't make because of COVID, blah, blah, blah. It's fine. I they could just throw it all away. But you're looking at a team that, again, I kind of brought this up a couple weeks ago. Why did this team sign Bryce Harper? The answer is because I think they saw a lot of this go in a different way. But now we're looking around and it's just like the jokes we make about what this farm system was able to produce are really jokes. It's like, no, man, that's your starting first baseman. That's your starting infielder, second baseman, I guess, in Kingery's case. Those are guys who need to be better than non-contributors. And that is exclusively what the Rhys Hoskins has been hitting 170 since last August 1st.
Oh,
that's
a year. I mean, it's not, but it is.
Right. I mean, all sorts of equations, angles, and numbers were thrown out there last night as the Phillies fell to 5-9. Again, they lost 5 of 6 against the Marlins and Orioles. They went 4-4 against the Yankees and Braves. The bullpen sucks. Neil Walker pitched last night, and the ERA of the bullpen actually dropped to 10-13. The bullpen numbers.
Congratulations to him.
They suck. The Orioles, 108 games kept getting brought up. They lost 108 games last season and managed to sweep the Phillies this year with a bunch of guys who are really just playing because they have nothing to lose. A lot of them are waiver wire pickups. Pretty sure the Phillies have access to the same waiver wire as the Orioles, but missed all these guys. The number of how many years Matt Klentak has had to architect a better team than the one we have now. 5. And just what in the hell we're supposed to do with the 46 more games of this shit. So it has gone from bad to laughingstock in my mind, if you were still capable of laughter. Tom McCarthy called Bryson JT Realmuto a two-man wrecking crew last night, and I think he meant it endearingly, but it just kind of brought to the forefront how little is going right for this team, even in the parts that you think are working, as the offense some nights can only rely on Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto to be a 1-2 punch. And if that's not going to hold, which typically it doesn't, then it's not enough. I believe Matt Breen of the Inquirer mentioned that without those two, the Phillies team OPS drops from 9th in baseball to 24th.
Oh.
I'm not a great fan of saying, like, hey, this is good, but if you take out the good parts, it sucks. In this particular case, I think it's an apt argument. He also framed it for several other teams taking their two most productive hitters out of the lineup, and the drop-off was, you know, a significant number of spots, but nowhere near as dramatic as from the top 10 to the bottom 5. So that's a problem. Despite, as Dane Perry at CBS Sports pointed out, Bryce Harper is off to a historic start. He's got a 214 OPS plus right now, which is higher than the 198 OPS plus he had during his MVP season a couple of years ago. But despite that, there's more things wrong with this team. This is a bad bullpen. Some guys you've got out there who are overmatched or unadjusted rookies. You've got redundant journeymen. You've got batting practice veterans. They're more adequately competent days long behind them. An offense that has to rely on fewer and fewer guys trying to do more and more. And starting pitching that would be pretty much acceptable if it didn't give way to a bullpen seemingly incapable of holding a lead. They didn't do a good job of putting this team together, whether it was going to be 162 games or 60 games. I can't see them doing a whole hell of a lot to shake things up right now, given how they're another bad series or two, maybe from being mathematically eliminated. I have no idea how, you know, that's going to work. But everyone's just like, they can't lose too many more games. And like, well, they're fucking gonna. And this Phillies front office, it scares easy. It scares so easy. So they're
crapping their pants right now. If you know, the Dodgers scared them last year in the middle of the season. Like, compress that down. They've lost this many games, 14 games in. Like, they have to be cowering under their desks, wouldn't you imagine?
So, yeah, exactly. So, you know, whatever move even makes sense to you right now. I've seen trade Rhys Hoskins for relief pitching starting to pop up, but I can't imagine what pitching you're going to get for a guy who's been hitting 170 since last year, who strikes out in just shy of a quarter of all of his at-bats.
You're going to get a guy that's similar to the guys that we already have.
Different names, same pitchers, really.
You have to trade a good guy to get a good guy. You can't just, like, they're just going to, like, that's one of those values at the margins trades. Like, they're just trying to find a guy who has untapped potential. Like, no, we're past that. That's not what we're supposed to be doing anymore. We're not an untapped potential team. We're a getting guys who are good team. Guys that are good already.
Sometimes
this bullpen does not have a lot of those guys. Like, why?
So, I don't know what move there is to make. Blame who you want. The correct person is everybody. But Among his contemporaries, Matt Klentak, I suspect, has always just really wanted to look like the smartest guy in the room. But I don't think he's got to be worried about being mistaken for that guy anytime soon. Mm-mm. So I don't know. I know your mind's kind of changed on whether or not front office changes can seriously be made after a season like this. The general assumption was no, I guess, because it wouldn't be fair, because this was such a huge monkey wrench and it's a weird season. And it's just, it's not a fair gauge for what the plan was supposed to be this. And you know what? To that extent, it makes sense. But like I said, this was the plan for if it was a full season too. Like, maybe they would have made some adjustments that they aren't going to make in a 60 game season. But like, year 5, we went to war with this team and they were killed immediately.
I want to make sure that we factor in, you know, the week they had off. Like, the initial shutdown was terrible, but every team had to deal with that. You know, Rhys Hoskins was in the middle of remaking his swing. You know what? So were other guys. That I don't care about, because they started even with everyone else there. But the week they lost because the Marlins were stupid, that I'm sure impacted them. But, there comes a point where that's not enough to say. Yeah, that's not – you put that in and there's still bad stuff. It doesn't matter how much time they lost. They've been playing for a while now. Like, get on it.
There should be enough talent on a team that's been rebuilding, or that was rebuilding for as long as the Phillies were, that were acquiring talent, that was major league ready, that was building up and developing talent in their farm system. There should be enough talent on a team that announces itself rebuild to still be as like a successful team in a 60 game season as opposed to 162 game season. You're right that it's not fair to count out X factors and the fact that this team had to sit back a week and through no fault of their own. Sure, absolutely. But like, shouldn't there be enough baseline talent that they can look better than this? Specifically in the bullpen. Well, especially in the bullpen. But in the cases of some starters who aren't hitting, you know, there can be, again, excuses made there. Like perhaps Scott Kingery has still suffering the lingering effects of having COVID. Who knows what's happening? So, yeah, if for fairness's sake, we can say that. But shouldn't there be a baseline of talent that would make this team better than it has been thus far,
absolutely,
regardless of everything else?
Okay. I mean, that's kind of the problem that we're seeing is that, like, you can put all of those, you know, all those factors into the blender and you get this team. And you can say, well, you know, some of the ingredients were bad, but in the end, this is what the team was going to be for 162 games. Like, how, I can't imagine. Like, granted, everything would be different. There would have been no shutdown and they would have played a full 162, but that's not what's happening. That's not what's happening. That's 60 games.
Without COVID, do you think the Phillies would have re-signed JT Realmuto by now?
By now, I have no idea. I don't know how much that's really impacting them, but I don't think we'll ever know.
We won't.
Every team's going to use that. Every team but the fucking Dodgers is going to use that as an excuse. the Dodgers, they don't care. They're over the luxury tax. They'll stay over the luxury tax. They structured Mookie Betts' deal so that it didn't totally hamstring them. There is some deferred money, which I think is a great idea. Deferred money is an excellent idea. If that's what the player wants, have it. You know, it takes less of a hit on the bottom line. You know, maybe the Phillies should try that if they're concerned about the luxury tax. The Dodgers don't care. The Dodgers want to build the best team possible every year because they are chasing a World Series. It's what they want more than anything. And if that's what the Phillies want more than anything, they'll act like it. They'll do that. They will sign JT Realmuto to an in-season contract that is worth how good he is. It's worth, you know, that equals the type of player he is. It's like do they want a bargain? Do they not want to sign him? What is their plan if they don't sign him? They don't have one. What is their plan? Like, that's something that's not, like, God knows when Klentak is ever going to let himself answer questions in front of, you know, with journalists ever again. But someone needs to ask him, if you don't re-sign JT Realmuto, what is your plan to replace that offense? What is your plan to have a decent catcher? Because Andrew Knapp isn't it.
You mentioned him talking to reporters. I was going to say, you know what pisses me off is the silence. Girardi has to jump on these post-game Zoom calls after every dipshit loss, but we've seen like one quote from Matt Klentak in the past like 8 weeks, and it was him going like, that's interesting, about the Mookie Betts deal in Los Angeles. The team he put together is, once again, shit. And John Middleton's plan was, let's retire Dick Allen's number. That'll make people look away for a second. Yeah, there we go.
For a whole second.
You've got fans piling up outside the gates, just desperate to root for this team, honking their air horns after JT's second two-run home run of the game last night, which was the last of the Phillies scoring before they got blown out 11-4. But still there, you know, honking their horns, celebrating. These people deserve, you know, some kind of clarity, but I don't think Matt Klentak gives a shit about them.
No.
He cares about what his inner workings and his inner sanctum are telling him, and he doesn't really care about much else. It pisses me off because he'll never feel as strongly about this team as most of the fans do.
Yeah.
And that is a ballsy statement, but I think it might be true.
That's one thing you never had to worry about with Amaro.
Yeah.
And part of it is that his father played for this team. He was a bat boy in 80. Then he played for this team. Then he worked for this team. His life, most of his life, you know, minus the last 5 years, his life is this team. And so you knew that he cared just as much. You know, you knew that David Montgomery gave more of a shit than anybody because it wasn't, he wanted to make money. He was a team owner, but he was a ticket taker. He bought the team, you know, with less money than you would think you would need and grew it into this incredible franchise. You knew that he gave a shit. You don't know that anyone at the top gives a shit anymore. You just don't. And that's part of the problem. Like, if this was, if there were fans around this season, whether it was 60 or 162, if they were doing this badly, there would be booing. There would be people not showing up. It would be a thing everywhere that the team is again this bad and fans are angry because they're sitting in the stadium and waiting for this team to be what they've promised. But the front office is now inoculated from that because of COVID. There are no fans in the stands. And the fans that are outside are out there cheering because they just want, everyone misses baseball. Everyone misses something normal. Everyone wants to get back into the stadium regardless of how good or bad the team is because it's getting back into a baseball stadium and being with friends and family and watching a baseball game in person. That's what that's about. And I really hope that they don't twist that into, well, look, there are people banging on the doors. We're doing fine. No. Like, they should have to stand somewhere and everyone should boo them because that's what, that's the only thing that we have. We have to show fans, to show our dissatisfaction. We don't show up. And when we do show up, we boo. That's the only thing that we have. And we don't even have that this season. And they're just, I'm so worried they're just going to skate. Because if you take that week they had at the beginning of the season, that's enough for Matt Klentak to say, look, this really didn't work out the way I planned. Give me another chance. And Middleton can say, yeah, of course you should have another chance. This was crazy. Not, holy shit, how did you construct a team that was this bad over this short amount of time? How?
Zipping back a little bit in regards to that, actually, and what the Phillies could even do right now, they have made moves. As Todd Zielecki characterized it yesterday, Philadelphia is trying a little bit of everything to improve its fortune. Despite the flurry of transactions and tweaks to their lineup, the Phillies have lost 5 of their past 6 games. Does it feel like the Phillies, is that a fair assessment? The Phillies are trying a little bit of everything? That kind of jumped out at me. I kind of felt like, yeah, they've kind of just swapped out guys from their player pool onto their roster, and the difference has been nothing really yet. Something like Alec Bohm getting promoted yesterday was really exciting and very cool. He smokes a double down the left field line in his first major league at bat. That was awesome.
He made that great tag at third.
Yeah.
On that Roman Quinn throw. He did something useful for the first time in like 5 games.
Yeah, that was great. It was great. Great to see that. But like, I don't think the kind of moves that they're making can be qualified as a little bit of everything. And I don't think any of the moves like that, I don't think there's any game changers. Like, hey, maybe Bohm comes up and is awesome. That's going to be huge. But I don't think there's a whole lot of game changers right now. This team is pretty deep in the hole. And as good as Alec Bohm could be, he's not going to help the bullpen, I would assume. So, yeah, I don't know if that's a problem that's going to, you can solve in less than 60 games. You know, I don't think it's fair to credit the Phillies. Oh, they're just making all these moves. No, they're just like doing what is available to them.
I think they're
trying a few things that they are willing to do, not trying a little bit of everything.
Yeah. I mean, what is a little bit of everything? Like, I don't even know what the, no one knows what the trade market's going to look like. We're approaching it. We're approaching the trade deadline and there's been really nothing. I think it's going to be quiet because it's just like, what, why give it up? Why give anything up for, you know, a World Series that, you know, will always have an asterisk next to it? Which, I mean, fair or not, it will. And it should. Like, the team that wins should be proud because Major League Baseball has made sure that this is as hard as possible for everybody. So the team that wins should feel proud, but it's not the same. So why waste resources on that? Like, the Dodgers signed a guy they already had for a number of years beyond this bullshit year. That's really it. So I don't think anyone, like, maybe it'll be just a couple of, you know, you know, lower level guys changing hands, but no one's going to be willing to do anything. And the Phillies have shown themselves unwilling to even trade some of those low level guys. You know, who knows why? Maybe they don't get good enough offers. Maybe they're afraid that they'll be good once they leave, which if they are, that should tell them something. How are they this bad at everything? How?
And not to dwell on this, as I always make the claim I'm trying not to do, but clearly am. Unless this team breaks off a bunch of wins here, I think it's fair to wonder if they're going to just, and this is kind of what I was hinting at earlier, try to do a soft reboot. I don't know what your other options are. Like, if the season ends and Rhys Hoskins is still a non-factor, Scott Kingery is still struggling, we're still throwing Adam Haseley and Roman Quinn out there trying to figure out what works. The rotation is still, the back of it is largely still in question. The bullpen doesn't get any better. And you're kind of just looking around like, okay, we have Bryce and JT, and sometimes we have a couple of the other hitters. It's been an inconsistent, but at times effective offense. That's the last, probably the last thing I'm worried about is the offense right now. That goes to show you how much having one thing at least that you can rely on to work does for confidence. Like, well, they could win. It's not impossible that someone comes up and knocks a hit. Whereas with the bullpen, you're thinking it is impossible for them to hold this lead. It is impossible. So I'm just thinking like ahead to the end of the season, which yes, is skipping over a bunch of games and things that could happen and will happen. But if things don't really improve and this 5-9 team pretty much ends the season with the same kind of record, but over 60 games, and then JT walks, I don't think you, what do you do at that point? I think it's automatically a reboot.
Yeah.
If he doesn't walk, maybe, but there's still like some things you got to do to keep your head above water. But of course, again, like I said, they can chalk anything up to being caused by a bizarre 60-game season that in which they missed a week due to a COVID outbreak. But I feel like that's going to be the true linchpin. And if that happens, I don't know how Matt Klentak is the guy for the job at that point.
He's already like, done okay, it once.
Yeah, and we've done a full rebuild. They can't claim that it would be a full rebuild again because people will shred their season tickets. Bryce Harper, and that's when I go back to like, so why did they get Bryce Harper again? And again, the answer is because they thought things would go better than they did. I don't know. I'm like kind of all over the place because how did the Phillies wind up with so little when the Orioles apparently have just a bounty of guys who are like, yeah, they're not great, but already they're like, oh, Rio Ruiz, like he's terrific. He's been great for them. What's his name? Hanser Alberto, the second baseman. Yeah. Pedro Severino, like all these guys right now, the Orioles have three guys hitting over 300, by the way, who have all played in a very normal amount of games this season. Anthony Santander beat the crap out of the Phillies. He had a great series against them. Dwight Smith Jr. I mean, like all these dudes, except for Chris Davis, are hitting right now, like all of them. And most of them, I think Austin Hayes, the center fielder, might be the only homegrown product position player wise. Jose Iglesias was the only free agent, and everybody else was like a waiver wire pick. I think I don't have the exact thing in front of me, but that's, you know, talking with an Orioles fan friend of mine, that's, you know, what I was led to believe. And isn't that rebuilding? Like, how did they wind up with all these guys who are hitting right now through 15 to 18 games, but the Phillies wound up with what? Bryce Harper when they thought they were ready, but it turns out, whoops, they're not. So the sequel to this is like I said, is what? A soft reboot where they're like, well, we gotta now, we're not gonna contend for a couple of years, but Bryce is here. JT's not. Maybe some of these guys still turn the corner, but also maybe we give up on some of them. I don't know, man. They're in a mess. They're in like a very weird kind of distinct mess where nobody can play. So I don't know. I think it's just not healthy at this point to think that far ahead, as easy as it is to. And I just can't help but view the looming Real Muto free agency as a grand finale to this slapdick fireworks show, because Zalecki also said Real Muto seems to be thriving off the signed JT chants he hears from fans outside the ballpark and the love he feels across the Delaware Valley. Fans want the Phillies to re-sign Real Muto, who can become a free agent after the season. It's hard not to be aware of it, he said. They definitely make their voices heard, and I certainly appreciate that. The passion that they have for this team and the backing that they have had for me is obviously greatly appreciated from me, and I definitely hear it. Keep it up, guys. So if it wasn't for keep it up, guys, I would say that was almost a perfect non-answer, where it was just like, wow, it's really cool that you guys feel that way. Anyway, I'll be hitting free agency and making more fucking money than I ever imagined. Take care.
I mean, he's loved. Like, he's beloved and he's enjoying it. And that is enough for him to be like, yes, I would love it if they signed me. He's practically begging the front office to do it.
Do you think that?
I don't know. He's like, keep it up, guys.
Yeah.
Continue saying that you want the Phillies to sign me.
I mean, but at the end of the day, they would just say it's just business if he went somewhere else.
Of course.
I mean, he would. So, like, keep it up, guys.
That doesn't mean it's true.
Keep it up, guys. Maybe I'll sign there. I don't know. I it's tough to imagine the Phillies look at all appealing to him, but
I mean, we look at the team in a very black and white sense. It's winning and losing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's his job. He's with those guys every day. He's with those coaches every day. He's, you know, those are his coworkers. And most of the time in baseball, you're not going to be overwhelmingly successful. And I think in the end, you have to, it has to be about, to a certain extent, the people you're with. And so the only thing I can imagine is that he really enjoys being in Philadelphia, that he enjoys living there. He enjoys playing there. He enjoys the people he's with and his teammates, especially the ones he knows are going to be around for a while, which is Bryce Harper and Aaron Nola. That's it. Those are the only guys with any, you know, Didi Gregorius. I would love it if he stayed. Everyone else can leave. Yeah, like Alec Bohm is here, of course, but everyone else can go. And if they manage to keep those guys, there is a way forward. Like, it's going to cost some money. They have to commit to, you know, it's not a, you know, a soft reboot, but it's a holy crap, this is bad. It's no longer, they can no longer wait. Like, if they're committed to, they need to pick one, Scott Kingery or Rhys Hoskins. Because if neither of them are going to hit, they need to pick one.
Yeah.
You can only have one of them. Scott Kingery has an incredibly tradable contract and a shit ton of potential. I think other teams would be dying to get their hands on him, just like they were J.P. Crawford.
Oh, he's got Rays written all over him.
Yep.
He's so Rays, and they have a terrific farm system.
They'll
so
pick him up, and they will figure out what to do with him, whatever it is, being at the Phillies is not working for him. Whether it's you know, Scott Kingery or Rhys Hoskins, either way, it doesn't matter to me anymore. They have to make choices. It's no longer about this team that they put together and, you know, with starry-eyed wonder, hope, you know, imagining a future of, you know, big Rhys Hoskins, you know, billboards and parades. Like, it's not that anymore. That dream is dead. You have to look at the team, pick the guys that you know you want to keep, and go from there and be like, what is our goal? Is our goal the World Series? Is our goal the playoffs?
can it be? If it's not?
let's just lower the bar. Our goal is the playoffs, which is pretty much all you need. Anyone can win the World Series from there. We've seen it happen. Anyone can. The Phillies could if they got there. Who knows? But they have to get there. They need to figure out what they need to replace in order to get there. So they need to clean house everywhere. And they need to get rid of Matt Klentak, because having him pick players is obviously a terrible fucking idea.
I saw the other day a noted Philly sports media personality talking about why they have such an appreciation of Nick Pivetta. Even now, didn't seem reluctant to offer any criticism, and said something along the lines of, I just would hate to give up on such tremendous potential because we were so impatient.
Impatient?
Yeah. Go ahead. You're just going to say what I would have said.
What the fuck is that? He's been here for so long. He's gotten so many chances. If he's not what he should be by now, it's time to let someone else try. That's it. You can't just say he has potential forever. At some point, he has failed to fulfill it.
This is year four.
Year four.
This is year four, and it's not like I'm talking about a fraction of a season before this. He's had three full seasons. 26 starts in 2017, 32 starts in 2018, only 13 starts in 2019, but appeared in 30 games. That's a pretty decent sample size, I would say. And in none of those season-by-season sample sizes did he prove to be a supremely effective pitcher. And the Nick Pivetta thing is he's not going to hurt us anymore for now. So that's not super. But the idea that like impatience, it feels like
impatience.
How is it possible
gall to say that out loud?
You can't really claim that impatience would be the reason. Like, don't get me wrong. We're certainly susceptible to impatience, both here and elsewhere in the Philly sports universe. But I think it's fair to say for a lot of these guys outside of your Alec Bohms, your Spencer Howards, I think even Adam Haseley, who I've been encouraged by this season more than anything, hasn't quite run out of chances yet. But most of these guys, like your Pivettas and your Velasquezes and your Hoskins and your Kingeries, they've been around here for a while, and it's time to make some hard decisions. I don't know what has prevented you from making those decisions before now. Maybe it was trying not to be impatient. Maybe it was, this was supposed to work. Why isn't it? It's just a matter of time. I said yesterday in regards to fixing Rhys Hoskins, the only way out is through. So if he is going to get better, then you got to keep putting him out there. Mm-hmm. And, I will, as discouraged as I am by what we've seen so far, I don't think it's impossible for him to put together a hot streak here. But if even that occurs, you got to look at it at the end of the season as like, all right, how much more of this is worth it, though? Like, how much more are we really going to put a guy out here who is just going to get hot for a couple of weeks here and there in a way we can't even really plan or strategize around, and most of the time look completely overmatched and unable at the plate? Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, and I think we're at that point, a decision has to be made. And yeah, that's why all these frustrations kind of tie into a giant rat king of frustrations in the center here. Like, you're frustrated that we don't hear anything from Matt Glentek. Not that he's going to open his diary and tell us his innermost thoughts, but just like something to let him know that people who care about this team are interested in the direction of it. And you get frustrated why guys are still here, or why they were mismanaged leading up to this point, or, because the whole track record is messy. Maybe Kingery has better luck if he's not forced into a super utility role from year one, or if Hoskins isn't dropped into left field for a season. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Where he just, bled runs for a while. You don't know. But we're just at this point where it's like, all right, are we trying to contend or not? Is Bryce Harper here for a reason? And is that reason only to sell tickets, or is it because they want the team to contend and win a World Series? I don't know. It's such a strange team building exercise the past couple of years. Part of it's been bad luck. Part of it's been bad hops. Part of it's been bad evaluation. Part of it's been bad hires. Part of it's been bad management. Part of it's been bad in-game execution.
That's a lot of problems to fix.
You can pull some silver linings out of this. You certainly can. We've sat down and talked about what we think Matt Glentek has, like what his successes have been. But at this point, if this season ends the way it's been going, then you gotta understand that the things Matt Glentek has done wrong greatly outweigh the things he's done right. Like, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, it's great that he picked up Corey Dickerson and Jay Bruce. Doesn't really matter when he can't put a bullpen together to save his life. If you can overcome a bullpen that's average, and allows games to slip away on occasion, you can't overcome a bullpen that just isn't an asset, that doesn't help at all. Where, you know, people were like, oh, Hector Neris was always going to give up. Don't put so much pressure. He was always going to, like, have a bad game or show up. He had, like, the first time that he got hammered this season was in his, what, third appearance, fourth appearance? And that's your best pitcher coming out of the bullpen. So if, like, your best pitcher is going to blow it, your closer is going to blow it every 3-4 times out, and the rest of your pitchers aren't even that good, then you have put together a very bad bullpen. So, yeah, it's tough not to ramble.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's tough.
The Phillies,
it's tough because this is...
Sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Just say the Phillies have to decide if they want to win, how they want to do it. Because they obviously, you know, they wouldn't be doing this if they didn't want to win, but they have to decide, do we want to win on the merits of our rebuild to look like, you know, we did it the way we wanted to, or do we want to fucking win? Because there are lots of different ways to build a team, and the way the Phillies have done it is not working. And they should not continue to do it this way. Like, you know what happens when they sign good players? They do good things. Bryce Harper, I was, you know, he did not have the most outstanding 2019, but he has looked incredible this year so far. Didi Gregorius has been a fantastic net positive. You know, when you sign good players, good things happen. I don't know why they can't do that everywhere. Why can't they do that everywhere? Like, just, it's just money. You can't take it with you, goddammit.
Look at Didi. Look at Zach Wheeler. Look at JT Realmuto. Look at Bryce Harper. These are all success stories thus far. These are all good things that, yeah, the complaint against long-term deals is always, well, he's going to degrade. You know, we don't want to give JT Realmuto because he's a catcher. He's going to degrade. Bryce Harper's going to not be as good, you know, in 5-6 years. Yeah, that's why you understand this is part of the window. This window is open now because those guys are performing at the level they are, and they won't forever. That's why the window is supposed to be open. When you don't build around that talent when it's available, and you're scrambling to fill in holes as these guys, you know, lose another season, then you're not executing. You're not executing well. That's not a job well done by a front office. You know, you had the talent right in your lap. You acquired it. You went out and acquired it, and it worked. That's a win for you. Thumbs up. Way to go. But then if you can't fill that out, then woof, man. I mean, look, like I said, the correct person to blame is everybody. Rhys Hoskins, you got to get the bat on the ball, man. I'm sorry. Like, I love Rhys, but like 170, it's a real shitty batting average. It's got to improve. And he knows that. Scott Kingery, same thing. I feel for you. You had COVID. It's fucking terrible. Baseball player doing what you do, got to do a little better, I'm afraid. Roman Quinn, stop diving for balls 3 feet in front of you. Can't do that. They're going to get past you every time. You're fast. Great throw the other night. Can't do that. Terrible decision. Gene Segura, adjusting to playing third base. Maybe we should get a third baseman. I don't know. Why are we moving an infielder over to third base when apparently there's a whole adjustment period he's got to go through for that, and the season's only 60 games long?
I mean, don't we have one now? Isn't that what Alec Boehm is here to do?
And now we have Alec Boehm. So, like, Gene Segura, also, don't call that pop-up. You know, that's Rhys Hoskins' pop-up. Don't call for that. That was a terrible decision. Don't do that. You can start on the player level. You can move up to the manager. Say, hey, Joe. Yeah, Jay Bruce is one of your best hitters. Hasn't had a hit against a lefty. The other day,
why
you had him hit against
a... Oh, my God.
Other day, had him hit against a lefty with the bases loaded at a point where the Phillies really needed to score. He didn't do anything.
I almost died, Justin. That moment has been haunting me. Ugh.
He had Phil Gosselin on the bench in that moment. Phil Gosselin is 6-for-13 with 2 home runs against lefties so far.
What a stupid fucking decision.
In 2020. Yeah, I blame Joe Girardi for that decision. Bullpen. Throw strikes, get outs. Fuck you. fucking figure it out. I have way less patience with you.
Oh yeah.
Moving up the ladder, Matt Klentak. We've just been talking about it this whole time. Do your fucking job and come out and just fucking, what is it called? Like, eat your greens. Come out, talk to reporters, roll your eyes, whatever. Tell us something's happening. Tell us you guys are fucking alive in there. You're not just sitting in the dark waiting for the sun. Jesus Christ. Like, stop acting like you're better than everybody. That's the impression you're giving off, even if it's not the case. And it fucking sucks when the team looks this shitty. John Middleton, stop throwing us treats like you think we're fucking a rabid pack of animals who are going to forget that the team shits the bed on a nightly basis just because you're doing something like awesome. Like, that is awesome. And I want to talk about that, what was announced yesterday. But, like, don't fucking act like... And you know what? The whole thing where you're like, I'm stepping out of the shadows. I'm going to be this known Philadelphia sports owner. And look at me. I'm signing Bryce Harper. And the next year, like, oh, let's just hold back a bit on spending a little. You know, let's think about this. Let's suddenly... We need to handcuff ourselves to a luxury tax. Stopping and starting, that's not going to work. You gotta pick a speed and go at it.
And being out of the shadows means taking the good and the bad. That means standing there and letting the fans tell you exactly what the fuck is wrong with the team and why they're not going to spend money on it next year.
Yeah. So everybody can be blamed.
Everybody there sucks.
It can go around. It's a fucking merry. It's a carousel of bullshit. But I will say, before we finally take our first commercial break here, that the Phillies retiring Dick Allen's number, for whatever reason, I don't even care about what motivated this, just that they're doing it. I never expected that this would happen. Nope. I think it is fucking awesome. It is well-deserved. Dick Allen rules. He will be the first non-white player whose number is retired by this franchise, who has a lot of talent I think they need to recognize in this fashion throughout its history. As many have pointed out, it breaks their weird rule of we don't retire numbers of guys who aren't in the Hall of Fame. And that, of course, opens the doors for other players who deserve and should have their numbers retired from this franchise.
Hopefully they don't wait 50 years, almost 50 years after his debut to do that.
Dick Allen, anything that links him further with the Phillies franchise is great because of how shamefully he was run out of town by racist dipshits back in the 60s. Just fucking, I'm. It's so cool that he played here, and it sucks that he kind of like, it's not a story with a happy ending. It's just, it fucking sucks. But like, this doesn't fix that, but it does something to link him historically further with the franchise, which he should be. And God, I hope he makes it into the Hall of Fame when he's on the ballot in the upcoming year. So that was awesome news.
I think this will help that. I think this is partially to help that because he's finally up. There's a veterans committee that could admit him. I hope it happens. There's a lot of momentum for it, and hopefully there will be more. The only thing I'm disappointed at is that his number is being retired in September, but there will be no fans. I don't even know what they're going to do. Mm. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some kind of online ceremony, but he deserves to have a stadium full of people cheering him and honoring him for this incredible achievement. There are just a handful of guys who've had their numbers retired by the Phillies. And he's among them now, and he deserves to experience everything that goes along with that. And so I hope when fans are finally allowed back that they have a ceremony for him because he deserves it. If they don't, I will be loud about it. You know, they should have it on Alumni Weekend. Make that Saturday of Alumni Weekend Dick Allen Day, and then have Sunday be the guy that you know, the day that you put the guy on the wall. Like, that's how it should be.
Yeah, I hope that ceremony gets to be as cool as it deserves to be, because Dick Allen certainly deserves the honor they're bestowing upon him. That was great news the other day. I'm not going to say it definitely didn't distract me from the Phillies, if that's what they were trying to do. And also the news that Alec Boehm came up, was being promoted, also cool. Phillies don't really have any prospect bullets left in the chamber to fire off this season. So hopefully Alec Boehm is... I hope, you know, we see a lot of him in the days ahead. Yeah, he was a good, great start to his major league career. He's giant. I didn't realize. He is 6'5". Did you know
very
that?
Very big. He's a very big guy. He is tall. And yeah, he's real cute, too, in a very understated kind of way.
I did not know about his size. When he was loping from first to second base on his double in his first at bat, good Lord. Yeah, that's a 6'5", 218-pound man pounding down the base path.
Like that a giraffe.
Yeah, that was surprising. And as a guy who, you know, of similar size, I've run those bases before. And let me tell you, it was not as successful as Alec Boehm doing it. He made it look a lot cooler than I, did when I looked like I could go into a slide. I think I described it once as a walrus falling off the back of a truck.
Your style, your grace.
Yes. So yeah, there were two cool bits that, yeah, in no way distracted from the overall problems the Phillies face, but still cool nonetheless. All right, we're going to take a commercial break here, and then we're going to talk about what was going on with the 2010 Phillies right after this. Well, back in 2010, back in mid-August of a much more successful year, the Phillies played one of me and John Stolness's favorite regular season Phillies games of all time, a comeback walk-off win against the Dodgers in which the Phillies scored 8 runs in the final 2 innings, culminating in a heinous Casey Blake error at third base for Los Angeles, and ending with a Carlos Ruiz walk-off double that, I mean, it was pretty close to being gone. I was at this game.
Oh, cool.
I believe I was sitting, well, some of the best seats I ever had, really. I've never had, like, you know, the players-only club seating at Citizens Bank Park. I don't think I've ever sat behind home plate, but down on the 100 level, which is like big money for me, a guy who was, you know, laid off twice during his professional career. That was one of these games. I was actually down there on the third base side, and the game got out of hand. I didn't want to leave, but I was frustrated enough to get out of our seats. So we went into McFadden's, which was a haven for the sticky and miserable. And we watched the rest of the game down there. And yeah, that's one of those games where they reached a point where it was just like, they're going to win this game. Like, they're just, you know, they once they knocked in like 3 runs, 4 runs, and they just had all this momentum, they were getting guys on base with like no outs. And it was just like, okay, they're going to do it. So yeah, I remember that game very vividly, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. I love it a lot. I remember you remember the kid, the Hex kid behind.
Yeah, that's right.
The Hex kid.
That's right. That was a great protagonist for that rally.
Yes, perfect. He's just, you know, waving his fingers. It was adorable. He did an interview with Good Day on Fox 29. Not long after it happened. The kid's name is CJ Ottinger. And he was at the game with, I think, 2 of his 3 brothers. He's from Vineland, New Jersey. There is definitely theory to what he was trying to do, saying he was trying to make the pitcher throw it down the middle or throw balls.
That's a good spell. That's a good trick. And look, he did it.
Yes.
Wow, that's a powerful child. I assume the government has him in a compound somewhere at this point, given his talents. The Phillies roughed up Chooch after the after his walk-off act. They roughed him up so much he suffered a sore right quad and was kept out of the next day's lineup. Guys, it's 2010, all right? Everybody's a little older. You guys got to relax, all right? You know, bodies don't heal the way they used to, maybe. And also, that's your catcher. So just, you know, ease up a little bit. Speaking of which, Chase Utley was 2 weeks ahead of his recovery schedule from whatever. This was the thumb thing.
Yep.
Stepping back onto the field in Clearwater for the first time since June 29th. It's mid-August, by the way. June 29th. Utley could be back tomorrow, read the headline in the Daily News. And I mean, that was it. That was the headline. There was no, like, they were just like, Utley, could have just put Utley as the headline. That would have
exclamation point.
Would have been fine for us. Yeah, we would have known exactly what they meant. On August 16th, that was the headline. And there was much rejoicing throughout the land. In his absence from June 29th to August 16th, the Phillies had gotten from the second base position a .234 batting average, 4 home runs, .284 on base percentage, .345 slugging, and 0.1 wins above replacement. On the whole that season, if you factor in Chase Utley, they got a .264 batting average, .349 on base percentage, .404 slugging, and 5.9 wins above replacement. So you could say we were missing Chase a little bit. You know, yeah, they had actually managed to win a bunch of games, but, you know, skill-wise from that one position, I don't think it's going to surprise anybody to learn Chase Utley was the biggest contributor to second base.
Who took his place? It was what, Valdez?
Valdez was out there. I had the list. But chiefly Valdez was kind of their go-to infielder at this point in Phillies history. But they had Juan Castro.
I was about to say Juan Francisco. No, I'm smushing together Juan Castro and Ben Francisco.
I don't know if Cody Ransom ever played second base. He was listed as an infielder. I kind of don't remember him play. I feel like he was an outfielder. I don't know why.
I think he was. I think he hit a big home run at one point.
He did. It was in a game we talked about. He hit a, I think, a game-tying home run against the Reds after Greg Dobbs hit one in another big comeback. Yes. The second best comeback of 2010. They also had Brian Bocock for six games. He was a shortstop, but God only knows. When you're trying to plug that Utley hole, ooh, baby. You'll jam anything in there that looks like it'll work.
So
Kyle Kendrick swore he had a fresh new attitude about getting shelled, which was great news. Because he had just been shelled on August 10th by the Dodgers, giving up 8 hits and 6 runs in 3 1/3 innings. Earlier in his career, he had told local sports writer David Hale that a start like that might have derailed him. But now he was already over it by August 14th. And I think we all know that being over something is as simple as saying you are. Well, Kyle Kendrick's next start was a good one against the Mets, in which he went 6 2/3 against the Mets, allowing only one earned run. But then he gave up no less than 7 hits and no less than 4 earned runs in each of his next 4 outings. Over it!
He sucks.
Cole Hamels.
He sucks, man. Not Cole Hamels, Kyle Kendrick.
Yeah, I snuck that in there on you. Cole Hamels was getting no run support. That's what I was going to say. This was peak time of this phenomenon. This time on August 14th, Cole Hamels went through 6 shutout innings against the Mets and had the only hit of the Phillies' offense. He was struck in the thigh by a David Wright line drive, too, and the team lost 1-0. They almost got no hit if it weren't for Cole Hamels getting his only hit by R.A. Dickey.
I mean,
yeah.
Even good teams have extremes. You know, they could be very good, they can be very bad. Who knows why they were stymied? But you know what they were? They were also very good sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
It is, yeah. And getting no hit by R.A. Dickey was entirely possible at a certain point. But he's a knuckleballer. It's a very frustrating pitch to get no hit by. Speaking of the Mets, the Phillies had been unable to score at Citi Field for over 38 innings at this point, with the run being scored by Roy Halladay, who had the first hit of the evening in the game that was the day after Cole Hamels had supplied the only hit at all for the Phillies. The Mets fell completely apart in that game, thank goodness, committing 3 errors, including one by David Wright with the bases loaded, and the Phillies managed to win 4-0 with, again, the offense being keyed by the pitcher. After their 3-1 win over the Mets on August 15th, the Phillies crawled into the co-lead of the NL wild card, tied with the Giants, and they got there with both Utley and Howard, and the return without both Utley and Howard, the return of both was hotly anticipated. They were set to play 24 games in 23 days, starting with the Giants at home. That meant Pat Burrell was coming back around, and he gave some very nice quotes about how the atmosphere at CBP was just different, and the fans were a big part of that. Not very burly of him, in a good way. I mean, he was hitting .285 at this point, bouncing back from his year in Tampa, where he had struggled because he had been used exclusively as a DH. Liz, you have something depressing to say about this, don't you?
I do. Looking around, seeing what was happening at the time, there was an article by Andrew Baggerly of the Mercury News about how when they were teammates at the University of Miami, Pat Burrell helped bring Aubrey Huff out of his shell.
Bummer.
Yeah.
Wow. Imagine Aubrey Huff in his shell. What a better world this would be.
So I'm going to I'll read a little bit. Huff was rooming with two seniors who hated his guts and were just constantly ragging on him. So here's the story. And I'm going to get to a certain point and you will remember the story because everyone does. After 2 weeks at Miami, I wanted to go home, Huff said. So my mom flies out trying to convince me to stay. I was living with two seniors and they ragged me too. I just didn't understand all this baseball ragging nonsense. She's in my room one night and I'm sitting on my bed and she's telling me to give it another 2 weeks. Anyway, there's a knock at the door. And before I can even get off the bed, Pat comes barging in with a 6-pack in his hand, dripping wet and naked. So I jumped up and shut the door. Coming from Texas, these things didn't happen. I said, "See what I'm dealing with here, Mom?" She just started laughing and said, "Actually, that's pretty funny." And I thought, if my mom can laugh at this, why can't I?
Man, So imagine, yeah, Aubrey Huff was clearly a pile of clay to be molded at this point. And if he hadn't had like two dickheads who were like, yeah, we're the kings of the school and we got this way by being dickheads as examples. And then his steward for reaching that point himself was Pat fucking Burrell. No wonder he is the way he is.
Here's the last bit, which is really explanatory. Huff went to practice the next day, determined to take Burrell's ribbing and throw it right back at him. He recalled his initial comeback's attempt as awkward, but he got better at it. It was almost as vital a skill as hitting a curveball. I really believe that's when I learned to be a ball player, Huff said. If I didn't go to Miami, if Pat didn't wear me out, I wouldn't have made it to the big leagues. This is a humbling, challenging game. You have to be mentally tough.
Well, I wouldn't say Aubrey Huff is mentally tough. I would say he's, I guess, the opposite. like you mentally is I wouldn't say that's a strength of his, but I get it. Like, it's, you know, he had to fight his way out of from the bottom of the social ladder, and he figured out how to do that. But that turned him into a world class shitty person. Mm-hmm. So at what cost, frankly?
Burrell did confirm that that's exactly how it happened. He said he didn't know how the six pack got in his hands, but he had left the shower looking for shampoo because there wasn't any in there.
I wasn't sure how that six pack got in my hands.
Yep.
That's great.
Could there be, like, if there was a Burrell action figure, there would be, it would come with a little six pack in his hands. It's like his accessory. Yeah,
come on, man. Well, whatever.
He was showering. I'm guessing he got out to look for shampoo, saw the six pack and thought, ooh, shower beer.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, whatever. So at this point, also, the Phillies had been making use of the Iron Pigs, and with September on the horizon, roster expansion was on the mind. So the Inquirer provided a list of who we'd see or had already seen as part of the call-ups. Among them was Brandon Duckworth, which I don't have a story for this. I was just like, wait, he was still like around in 2010? I did not remember this at all. Isn't that a late 90s? I guess you can go as early as the early 2000s, maybe not late 90s. Yeah, he didn't come up till 2001, so I guess that's not fair. But like, I had been hearing his name since the late 90s, and I did not remember him still being a thing in 2010. He did not come up, for the record. He was he had actually left the Phillies organization and went to the Astros and Royals for 2004 through 2009.
Wow.
So he had left the organization, came back exclusively in 2010 as part of the Iron Pigs rotation. He had a 3.32 ERA in 25 appearances and 16 starts. So no wonder, you know, I would take that now. Absolutely. Does 2010 Brandon Duckworth want to come out of the Phillies
is
bullpen?
He available?
I would accept that.
Maybe 2020 Brandon Duckworth could actually be helpful. Anybody want to call
him up? I'd take a flyer. I would take a flyer. He's only 44 years old. Like, come on. He's still got some arm strength. Why not? Get his shot. Liz, you got any 2010 tidbits for us?
I do. The one thing that I think everyone remembers from this time is Ryan Howard spotted at Dorney Park by a blog that shall remain nameless. Yes.
What a monster.
Yes.
In the middle of the season, Liz? Inexcusable.
Taking his young son to have fun while he should have been rehabbing his ankle.
When you rehab an injury, doctors say if you are not rehabbing it 24/7, every hour of the day, it will explode. And anyone who's relying on you to be good at your job will be disappointed. That is a direct quote from every doctor in the world. So I can't believe Ryan Howard would go against the health community like this.
It's the Allentown Morning Call apparently tried to talk to trainer Scott Sheridan about it, and he was unavailable.
Interesting.
My guess is that this is a stupid fucking question.
He's like in line with Ryan Howard and his kid at Dorney Park.
Sorry, can't talk.
yay. Oh, another one of those fun moments where we treated Ryan Howard with the respect he deserved.
I mean, Ryan Howard, when I think it was, I don't remember if it was Matt Gelb or Megan Montemaro, but one of them interviewed Ryan Howard last year about the number retirement thing, and he brought up Dick Allen like, on his own. He said he did not want to talk about himself. He wanted to talk about, you know, Dick Allen should actually have his number retired.
And if they're taking advice, I mean, honestly, the Phillies should be taking more advice from Ryan Howard.
Always. They should always be taking advice from Ryan Howard. Yeah. I hope it doesn't take them 50 years to, you know, retire their numbers. Let's let them do it when they're young and their families can come see them.
That was like the conversation a little bit ago. I do think this opens the door to that. I do think that if the Phillies are retiring Dick Allen's number, then they are aware what that means of people's expectations moving forward. And I think we can look forward to seeing that happen with the, you know, the guys we've talked about, and maybe even some, you know, some other guys beyond that. So Phillies have a lot of numbers they can still retire. There's plenty to go. There were what, six up till now, and they hadn't, their most recent one was Schmidt. Mm-hmm. I want to say. Yeah. So yeah, you got some time to make up for if you feel like it. And I think they
do. And I actually don't think that either Rollins, Utley, or Howard's numbers have been given out since they left.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, we would have heard about that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I remember that as a thing, that whoever handles that in the Phillies clubhouse has not given that out as a number or used it as a choice. He's reserved it because who wants to see anybody wearing – I don't want to see anybody else wearing number 6. I don't want to see anybody wearing number 26.
If Spencer Howard wore number 6, I would think that was fine.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that. a fun little thing for him to do. So, hey, Liz, tonight the Phillies take on the New York Mets. You know what? Hey, look, that Mets rotation, that might be the Phillies' bullpen of rotations right now. Honestly, Steven Matz has an 8.20 ERA. Rick Porcello has a 5.68 ERA. Marcus Stroman opted out of the season. Noah Syndergaard is apparently out for the season. I missed that news entirely. Michael Wacha is hurt. The Mets rotation, yeah, I think they sound just as bad as the Phillies relief corps, except for the part that it has the best pitcher in the National League on it, which is who the Phillies will face tonight in game one of this series against the Mets. It's going to be Jacob deGrom versus TBD, followed by Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler in the next two games against the Mets. So, hey, you know what? If the Phillies win 2 out of 3 from the Mets, what's your mental status going to be like?
Thank God.
They'd be 7-10 at that point. I mean, even the Nationals don't look good right now.
No, they don't look good at all. I was going to say the only team that could be worse at, you know, at winning games than the Phillies is the Mets. But the names that you said are not bad. They actually did a decent job of putting together a rotation that doesn't include a guy like Zach Eflin. Like, there's that, I guess, Steven Matz is there, Zach Eflin. But, you know,
Zach Eflin set a career high in single game strikeouts in his last
start.
Yeah,
he's a perfectly serviceable fifth starter. That's exactly what he is. The problem is that I think he's being asked to serve as much more than that.
Let me ask you this. Regardless of what, I mean, again, the Phillies have played 14 games. They've missed a week of the season. They are 5-9. They are 4 games out of first place. This is like the NL East standings, and I know they're playing more than just the NL East, but they're 4 games behind the Marlins, who are statistically first place in the National League East. The Marlins aren't going to be this hot the whole season, I would say. I don't think this is indicative of who the Marlins are.
I think
there is a falling back to the earth for the Marlins. The Braves are behind the Marlins at 11-9. The Mets are behind the Braves at 9-11. The Nationals are 6-9. And the Phillies are half a game behind the Nationals. We are saying some very strong and angry things about the Phillies. Is there a chance we are overreacting? Is there a chance this team wins like 7 of 10? I'm saying this for no reason. Gets right back in the thick of it. And we're going to look back and be like, I feel stupid. How much of a chance is that?
I don't think we'll ever feel stupid about reacting the way we did after what we saw. It's been 14 games, which is not an insignificant number of games. Yeah, some of them were played, you know, with a big break in between them, but that's still 14 games. We're not overreacting. The bullpen is really, really, really bad. They blew three different leads in that game against the Orioles, including dropping a pop-up that one of the guys could have caught.
To that same point, yes. The bullpen has cost this team, you know, if the bullpen were an average bullpen, the Phillies probably have like two or three more wins, which in the conversation about right in the thick of it, puts them right in the thick of it. Yeah. Like they have been cost dearly by that bullpen that in a way, I think I was telling Chris Jones the other day, the bullpen is so bad, it makes the whole team worse. Hitters put a little more pressure on themselves to have to overcome deficits. That game against the Orioles that ended in a dropped pop-up, the Phillies had to, you know, push. Bryce Harper had to tie it up with a two-run home run. D.D. Gregorius had to tie it up with a two-run single. You know, that puts when not every part of your offense is even functioning, it puts the pressure on the guys who are actually hitting to overcome the deficits of your bullpen. It puts pressure on starting pitching, perhaps, to stay in a game longer so that we don't have to go to the bullpen. It makes the whole team worse. And I think you're seeing some of that, but I'm just trying to offer the opposite perspective. It is factually true. There are four games behind the Marlins in the NL East. Factually true. Four games. There are still, it's still make-up-able amount of space. This is typically my early in the day mindset. I'm just like, why not? They can do it. That's fine. And then when we see them play, I'm like, why would anyone believe that good things can happen? This is insanely bad. It's not bad. It's wrong. This is incorrect baseball. So yeah, catch me later. Yeah. Catch me later on Friday night when I've seen a little bit of this team. But here's hoping to better things in the days ahead. We know there's at least going to be a Dick Allen number retirement ceremony. We know there's going to be some Alec Boehm in our future, some more Spencer Howard. I'm going to throw Adam Haseley in there too. Maybe when he gets back from his wrist problems on the DL, maybe he comes back and plays a little more center field and looks pretty good. Who knows? But that being said, yeah, just watch yourself emotionally. If you find yourself spiraling tonight, maybe just check out of the Phillies for the weekend. Have a nice time. Think about other things.
You can turn the game off. It is within your power. You will miss nothing. Hey, if it's a comeback, you'll find out about it. And you know what? It doesn't matter. You weren't going to witness it in person anyway. So
exactly,
it's totally fine.
Don't regret to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, Continued Success with me and Liz Rocher, and The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk. And don't forget to head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/hitandseason, where for $5 you get access to all kinds of bonus Phillies content, including Absolutely Hammered with me and Chris Jones, as well as John Stolness's recap of the 1980 season called Finally, and Liz and I have baseball movie reviews up there every month as well. It's well worth $5. So head on over there and get all the access to this team I just told you not to think about, but surely you want to hear us talk about for an extra $5 a month. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.